What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And there is breaking news about 90 minutes ago that we start our show with, and that is that Emmanuel Forbes is going to be out for some undetermined amount of time with wrist surgery / thumb surgery. He's got a torn ulnar collateral ligament. Yes, that is the one that if you're a baseball pitcher requires you to get Tommy John surgery. This sounds like it's more on the thumb side of his UCL, not the elbow side of his UCL. It's a big ligament that runs up your arm on the ulnar, which is the bone. You didn't think you're going to get an anatomy lesson, did you, Anthony? You didn't know that I knew all that about the UCL, huh?
I did not know all of that, but now yeah. I do.
You got your ulnar, and it runs up there, and that's why you got the ligament that runs up, and you got the thumb and the elbow, and there's a bone that connects the two. Yeah, it's your ulnar bone.
That hurts.
Yeah, so he's got a torn UCL, according to Ian Rappaport, and now been confirmed by all the usual local suspects, and that sucks for him. It sucks a whole lot for him. And I think there's like kind of three main points here. There's what does this mean for Emmanuel? What does this mean for the team in the short term? What does this mean for the team in the long term? And the first two are similar. It's bad. I know that might sound crazy because Emmanuel Forbes didn't play that well last week, and I didn't think he played with the kind of intensity and all that kind of stuff that they expect, but maybe he had a torn ligament in his thumb and that could have affected his ability to perform, because performing while in pain is a skill that some people perform better than others, and I also wouldn't want to go have to make tackles if I had a torn ligament in my thumb. So there's that. I think on the very short term, like, obviously this is bad for Emmanuel. This is a guy that wants to be able to go out and prove himself, prove that he's a better player. But then again, it might be a good thing for Emmanuel. It might get him off the field, let him reset, let him watch how they continue to coach and teach, and maybe he can learn some things from the sideline. Ultimately, he's going to have to go out and play to keep his spot on the team in the long term. And I'm not talking just about the rest of the season, but starting spot, but then a roster spot ultimately going into next year. He's going to go out and have to play and play well. And if this is a chance for him to reset after a tough outing on Sunday in the opener, then, you know, it sucks because, you know, his wrist probably really hurts and being in physical pain is not fun. It sucks because he, you know, if Noah Igbinoghene or someone else goes out and plays really well, are they going to want to put him back in? You never want to lose your spot to injury, because there's always a risk that you don't get put back in. But I think a lot of people are going to look at this for the team and say, like, this is bad for the team. And I would tell you that based off training camp, that is not the case. Now, there's definitely a chance they play better. I would say almost certainly they're going to play better than they did on Sunday, because they can't play much worse defensively than they did on Sunday. That is something that they just, this staff has real focuses on what they want to correct for this week, things they want to get right. You know, Joe Witt talked about today. He's like, we got to fix our leverages. We got to fix our discipline. We got to fix our communication. And they have ways to go about doing that are going to produce better results. They're also not facing a team that has the potency and firepower that, and cohesion and all those things, that Tampa had. And by the way, New York also has Daniel Jones, who is not currently remotely near Baker Mayfield's neighborhood. So for the team, they have to now play someone that got beaten out by Emmanuel Forbes in training camp. And I think that that's important to say, because most of what all of you out there have seen is the Emmanuel Forbes that we saw on Sunday, which looked very similar to the Emmanuel Forbes that we saw last year. But I was there for enough of training camp to see Emmanuel Forbes, the good version, the guy who's breaking on balls, getting his hands in there, making plays, locking guys down. Did he get beat by Terry McLaurin deep quite a few times? Yeah. Was there inconsistency? Yeah. But was he consistently better than Michael Davis? Yes. Was he consistently better than Noah Igbinoghene? Yes. Was he consistently, frankly, better than Benjamin St. Juice? I don't know about consistently, but the last couple of weeks of camp, probably. He was probably better than BSJ and deserved to be the number one corner on the depth chart and the number one guy on the roster. So I think that we have to be realistic about the fact that we're talking about a guy that at his best is the best that they've got. And now you for sure are having BSJ kind of be your number one guy, and we've seen what's happened the last bunch of years when that's the case. Or you're hoping that Michael Davis all of a sudden is something that he wasn't all camp and didn't show real consistently last year. Like, he had a couple good years with the Chargers, but there's a reason they were ready to let him go. Or Noah Igbinoghene, who's been a more of a journeyman type guy, but has some potential, and that he plays at a level that he frankly never has before. And I think in some ways it's kind of like when fans always root for the backup quarterback, right? The backup quarterback's the favorite guy on the roster until the second that he's got to play. Then you realize why he was the backup. And what I think would be a silly reaction to the Emmanuel Forbes injury is, one, any form of joy for someone getting hurt. That is inhumane, and that is not going to be tolerated on this year radio show. But on a much more, less human level, on a pure football level, I think it'd be silly to think that they have something better. Now, I also think that what we saw last week was not the best version of Emmanuel Forbes, and that week two Emmanuel Forbes healthy would have been better than week one Emmanuel Forbes, healthy. So he's going to grow, he's going to get better, and again, that doesn't mean that someone can't come in and play better than Forbes did. It's just, we won't know what Forbes would have been had he not gotten hurt, had he been able to stay out there, and had he continued to hopefully show the kind of growth that he showed in training camp when he eventually did turn the corner and did play the way that they want and get the results that they're looking for. So short term, and for Emmanuel Forbes, I feel really bad for him because I hate dudes getting hurt. It's an unfortunate reality of not just football, but pro sports, that this happens, of athletics. I mean, shoot, I twisted my ankle running today. I'm fine. It was a minor deal. But, like, it happens. You exist in the world. You can get hurt. And the higher athletic output you need, certainly NFL football, this is the kind of stuff that happens. Collisions at high speed. I don't know how he did it. Whatever it was, he's got a torn UCL. He needs thumb/wrist surgery. He also is going to probably be on the wrong end of better results, in that whoever is out there this weekend is probably going to play better than he did last weekend. That does not mean that he ultimately is a worse player than whoever that is. I'm guessing it's going to be Igbinoghene. But that's also NFL football. This is not saying everyone should cry for Emmanuel Forbes. Like, this is the unfortunate reality of how this league works, is that if, because you're no longer facing Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, you go out there and Noah Igbinoghene is able to play really well against Wandale Robinson and a rookie Malik Nabers in his second game, well, everyone's going to be like, how you said that there are worse players out there. It's like, yeah, Forbes could have probably done the same thing, but he's not going to get that opportunity. And maybe he comes back in week three and has to deal with Ja'Marr Chase, and that's going to suck. Or maybe it's not till week four and there's good receivers, basically throughout their entire schedule. So at the end of the day, Forbes will get another shot. And I hope that by then he has got it figured out up top in a way that he is not just like in a good headspace, but that he is in a place where the communication and responsibilities are clear. He can go out and play fast and play physical. He can get his hands on some footballs and show the ability that he showed in college to be the SEC's all-time leader in pick sixes, if not the NCAA, I believe's all-time leader in pick sixes. But for now, it is yet another shot to this cornerback room that feels kind of thin to start with, where there was a lot of experimentation of, can this guy that hasn't played as well as we have wanted so far, whether that's Forbes, whether that's St. Juice, on down the list, can those guys turn it around? And they're going to have to turn it around this weekend without 13 out there. Stoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, we'll take your calls and reaction to the news, 301-230-0980. Emmanuel Forbes out. We're not quite sure for how long yet. Obviously, if any news comes through, we will pass it along. But Emmanuel Forbes out, needs wrist surgery. What you make of it? 301-230-0980. We take your calls next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, where, Anthony, we actually have very smart people listening. And I was corrected on the ligament. You have two UCLs?
I didn't know.
Anthony,
I had,
literally looked at his wrist.
Left and right, right?
No, in that case, you have four. Because there is one ulna, the bone. But apparently there's a UCL in your thumb / your wrist and another one in your elbow.
And the one Forbes hurt is the one in the thumb wrist.
Wrist. Yeah. So all the things they said about Tommy John surgery and whatever, that's correct about if you tear the one in your elbow. But maybe this could become the Emmanuel Forbes surgery, the one on the wrist.
Mm.
Probably not. There's probably already a name for it. But. Yeah, so thanks to, let me give credit where credit is due here. Back to the Dr. Brian Press, doctor of physical therapy. He's like, sorry to correct, but the UCL does not run from your elbow to your wrist. You have two separate UCLs, one at your elbow, another at your wrist. And I was like, you want to know what? I have enough humility to admit when I was wrong.
I love to see it, man. Love to see it. And also, we're being educated.
We're being educated. Now we're educating others. Yes. You have 2/4 UCLs. In your body. 301-230-0980. This is where the educational portion of the program ends and the calling begins. 301-230-0980. It's the Team 980 listener line. What is your reaction to the Emmanuel Forbes news? Let's go to Kenny in Largo. Kenny, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Doing well, Kenny.
That's good. So I hope you understand my thought on this one, okay? So my thought on this one is, my first question is, why was he at corner to begin with? Meaning, was he there because they wanted to see what they had in him, or was he there because they had no one better? If he was out there because we had no one better, then I'm worried. Because that means whoever comes up after him is going to be in trouble. But if he was out there because they wanted to see what we had, maybe the person that comes in after him, whoever that may be, could be better and we could have a better defense or at least a better corner on that side. So that's my thought process on Emmanuel Forbes. What y'all think?
Yeah, Kenny, I think it's a good question. And I think the answer is kind of both. I've talked about this quite a bit throughout the offseason, but their roster needed so much work that there was only so much that they could do at one time. And trying to get top flight players is just, it's hard, right? Most of them come through the draft. There's only so many top draft picks that you have. Obviously, their first round pick they needed to use on a quarterback. They went in other positions early. Although, I mean, Mike Sanders still is a second rounder. It's not like that they didn't address that position. They just went inside at nickel instead of outside at outside corner. And I think that they made some calculated risks. They were like, for some of these guys, for a guy like Forbes, who was drafted last year, and Peter certainly had thoughts on him, right? He would have scouted him last year when he was in San Francisco, and maybe he wouldn't have taken him when Ron did, and certainly not over a guy like Christian Gonzalez, I don't think, based off of how Peter's, like the things that Peter seems to value versus the things the previous administration did. You have to take some risks there, and you have to say, like, well, we have these players under contract. We don't really have a great way to get other ones. Let's see if we can coach them up and get better out. And so, I again, this is why I'm kind of, for the clarity of the argument here, I'm glad they traded Jahan Dotson, right? They took their last two first-round picks, and they gave them opportunities as starters, as top guys, and ultimately, by the end of camp, Forbes had earned his starting job. If Noah Igbinoghene had been better in training camp, they wouldn't have started Emmanuel Forbes just because he's a first-round pick. They would have started one of the guys who beat him out. or Jahan Dotson did not beat out guys like De'Ami Brown or Luke McCaffrey or whoever, and they didn't like the way he was coming to work every day. So they're like, you want to know what? If you don't want to be here, like, we can send you somewhere else. Forbes fought to be here. He played well enough to earn his spot. And then he had a bad game. And guys have bad games. And I very much would expect that they're better this weekend without him, because I think they would have been better with him. And that's the hard part of the evaluation piece of this is, okay, you can't play the, you know, we're not in a global simulator here. You can't play the New York game once with Forbes and once without him. You just have to do your best guess on what would have happened with him or with him since they're going to play without him. And so I hope that, like, in a way answers your question, in that there's a very good chance that there's someone who could prove it this weekend that they're better for right now. Certainly they played better than he did last week, but also he did earn that spot coming out of camp. And that's because it's really hard to acquire really good players all in one offseason, and they chose to take risks in certain places versus others. And corner was a place with the talent that they had in Forbes, the talent that they had in St. Juice. They were willing to coach it up, take that risk, and they're going to live with the results. And if the results are bad, they'll address it next offseason.
Sounds good.
All right, Kenny, appreciate the call. 301-230-0980 is the Team 980 listener line. Your thoughts or questions on the Emmanuel Forbes injury? Let's go to Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Thanks for having me. I think my take on this is it depends on how long he's out, okay? If he's out, you know, 8 to 10 weeks, with this, I think it's a real, real blow to the franchise, because you wanted to see, I think this was going to get a sample size of him as to whether or not he was the future at the cornerback position. And I think you alluded to this, that, hey, if he's not the guy, then maybe we need to address this in the draft next year. And if it's an 8 to 10 week injury or something that takes him out the full year, they won't be able to make that evaluation, and they may be forced to make a move when maybe they don't need to make a move. If he was on the field and he proved he could be the number one guy, if it's a 4 to 6 week injury and he still has 10 games to play, I think that's enough of a sample size for them to make that determination. But you know, it's hard for a young player to lose time. I think, like you said, he played in training camp well. He earned the starting position, and you just hope mentally it doesn't take him somewhere that he doesn't need to go. But I agree with you. I think they're going to play better next week, whether he was in there or not. But I just hope the young man keeps his head up and, you know, does his rehab and comes back stronger than ever. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Gary. Thanks for the call. I think Gary's point, though, unlocks the next path or the next pathway of discussion here for Emmanuel Forbes, which is how he handles this rehab is now his test. They're watching how you do everything. And especially for a guy that's had some questions at times about his work ethic and about how he comes to work, his willingness to be disciplined. And that's on the field, right? We talked about it earlier in the week. Dan Quinn talking about how when he went to BSJ after he gave up the first touchdown to Evans, he's like, "Hey man, what happened?" Benjamin was like, I was there. I turned the wrong way. I know what I got to do." And Dan's like, "Great, let's fix it." Like, that doesn't mean that Benjamin can just say all the time, "Hey man, you know, I know what to do." It's like, eventually you got to do it. But in week one, playing some new techniques, playing with some in a new scheme, playing against Mike Evans, okay, fine. Hey, you know immediately what you got to do. You got to have the recognition next time to do it. And then he was like, when you go to a guy and he says, I don't know what I was supposed to do, that's a lot harder to work with, and that's not going to fly in the long term if a guy just constantly doesn't know what to do. And if you read between the lines, like, he was talking about Emmanuel Forbes. And so I think that now with that, with this different test, right, a different test to show the discipline, the professionalism, how you attack a rehab, how you focus or not in meetings, assuming that he's still going to be a part of them. Because sometimes when you're rehabbing an injury, you wind up doing some of the physical work in the meetings. Like, you don't need to be in a game plan meeting for a game you're not playing. But they also, if I'm DQ and I'm Joe Witt and I'm Adam Peters coming down from on high being like, "Hey, guys, we need to figure out and make sure he's in these meetings because I want to know how he conducts himself in the meetings." Like, do you stay locked in? Are you there to help your teammates? Are you contributing, doing whatever you can? Or are you just moping or doing the bare minimum? You know, are you in the building to do your rehab and immediately going home, not hanging out with your teammates, not being a part of the team, not being a part of the culture that they want to set here? And so this does become an enormous test for Emmanuel Forbes. And I'm not saying it's a bigger test than it would be on the field. That would be incredible, or than if he was on the field. That would be incredibly hyperbolic. But for a lot of the stuff on a baseline level, before you even hit the field, a lot of the stuff that they've got questions, and thus we've got questions about Emmanuel Forbes on, he can prove a lot in this period. And so this is a huge, typically it's 6 to 8 weeks is the number I've seen floated around in a couple of different places for recovery from this. So assuming he gets the surgery quickly, we're talking 6 to 8 weeks. You know, he'll be back, let's see, it's early November to late November, depending on what the timeline is for him. So this is an enormously important stretch for Emmanuel Forbes' professional career, not to mention like how you attack rehab determines how successful the rehab is. So if he doesn't do the work that he needs to do, like his thumb and wrist are not going to be right, which is kind of important for someone who wants to catch footballs for a living. So there's that element as well. But I just think how he comes to work every day with a good attitude, with a professional approach, with an idea of I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make this team better, even though I can't be on the field right now. If he does that stuff, his leash gets a lot longer without him even having to play. Eventually, he's going to have to do it on the field, but his leash can get longer, or it could get shorter based off how he attacks this rehab and the workman's, yeoman's approach that Dan Quinn expects and Adam Peters expect to players in their organization as they try to build this thing from the ground up. 301-230-0980 is the phone number, 301-230-0980. More of your calls on the breaking news that Emmanuel Forbes is going to be out for a little bit with wrist surgery next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up later in the show, Brittany Sykes from the Washington Mystics, who absolutely dismantled the Chicago Sky last night to now get into playoff position or closer to playoff position. They're just one game back of Chicago for the eighth seed in the WNBA playoffs. Slim has been leading the charge since the Olympic break. She's playing great ball. Absolutely wrecked Chicago last night. We'll talk to Brittany Sykes, the engine that makes the Washington Mystics go, coming up at 6:30 tonight. Our pick six at six, Dan Pizzuta at 5 o'clock from the 33rd team, who is going to be with us on Thursdays this year. He was awesome in his debut with us last week, so excited to have DP back on the show. But now we're taking your calls on the breaking news that Emmanuel Forbes is out for a hot second here, probably 6 to 8 weeks with a torn UCL in his wrist that requires surgery, first reported by Ian Rappaport. Let's go to Mark in Largo to keep the calls rolling. Mark, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman
Show. Hey, what's up, Craig? How you doing, my buddy? How you doing,
Mark?
How you doing? Look, I know a lot of people want to rain on Emmanuel Forbes, and I get it. I do. I understand that. But no offense, I think we got to give this kid as many chances as we possibly can. I think we pulled the plug on Jahan Dotson too early. And the saddest thing about Jahan Dotson, he had a great first year, and the second year wasn't that bad, and I thought we ran him out. I mean, look, I get it. But we got to give these first-rounders, even if they're not ours, a chance. We got you, because if they go to another team and they get it, everybody's going to be sitting over here saying, well, dang, what did we do wrong? You know, I know that hasn't happened, but I just think that we got to give this kid a chance. I know everybody can't stand him, and he's a lot of things, and he does need to grow up. But you got to remember, these are still kids, too. They're still young men, and a lot of them don't know how to handle themselves well now. A lot of people, I mean, it's a lot of things you could say to that. That's enough. That's a different story for a different day. But I will say we have to give this kid a chance. We just can't just keep giving up on first rounders that quickly. That's why I was so upset about Adam Peters, because I felt like giving up on Jahan Dotson that quickly was totally unacceptable. Chase Young, I understood. I totally understood why they did what they did last year. But Jahan Dotson after 3 years, really after 2 years, into a division rival, I just had a problem with that. But Craig, you do a great show. I'm gonna make comments about your situation with you and Logan later, probably sometime next week. I like you. You're in a good mood, and I want to keep you in a good mood.
What situation with me and Logan?
No, not situation. Your show with Logan next week. I'll do that next week. The show, because you're in a good mood, and I like you, Craig. I truly like you.
No, you can't do that. No, that's not how this works. What do you have to say about Take a Man?
Craig. Oh, my God. No,
I'll come back to the fact that you just defended Jahan Dotson's name, Jahan Dotson, while saying his name wrong seven times later. What do you have to say about Take a Man, Mark?
Okay. Craig, I just think, look, I'm a victim of it, too, because no one's a bigger victim than me. I love this team more than anything, okay? I just think that could we just hold off on this a little bit? Do you think some of these, when y'all do take commands, the players see this, they get a little bit of anxiety of listening to you guys?
No, because they don't
You sure? Because I know a lot of guys on the team don't like talking to the media because they just don't like – because – of sports radio, and maybe they don't listen to you. Their constituents listen to you, and they're telling them about what's going on.
Okay,
that's all I'm trying to say. Look, Craig. I know you love this team, and I know Logan loves the team, and y'all want to see what's best for this team. And I thought the criticism of Jaden Daniels was valid. I did feel like he could have did better instead of running all the time, and I felt like there were people that should have been open and stuff he should have hit. I agree with that. I just feel like. Not everything has to be dissect. Some of these kids, they're going to have to learn this.
Mark.
Every time.
Mark,
I'm just saying
Mark,
it. See,
I know.
Craig,
I promise you, I'm in a good mood, so I'm going to have some fun with you here. I'm not going to try to bite your head off.
I did.
And you want to know who absolutely loves your point right now?
Who?
Ron Rivera.
Hang up on me.
No, I'm not going to hang up on you. You want to know who loves your point right now? It's Ron Rivera. Because what your point is all narrative. It's zero substance. You want to know how Jaden Daniels avoids getting quote-unquote criticized on Take Command, which is not really criticism. It's analysis of what happened on film.
I agree.
He does the things that – it's not that we're saying it. It's like that's what the play design is. Like if the play is designed to hit – Terry McLaurin on the dagger against two men, like just throw the dagger. And you want to know who already agrees with that?
That was on him.
That
long pass, that was on Jay. That was on him. And there were a lot of runs. I think there was about four or five runs he could have passed. And see, what he doesn't understand, and I hope he does this week. You could even see the thing that his legs are so good that he could look like he's going to run and then someone's going to be open. Why? Because they're going to be so concerned about him running that someone's going to be open. And if he's behind the line, you got a big game. So
that's something that
I agree.
We talked about on Take Command.
But I wasn't talking about Jaden. I mean, Emmanuel Forbes did look like he kind of throwed it in. And why doesn't Ben St. Juice look back when the ball's in the air? Why does he never look the ball?
It depends on the play. On the first one, he turned the wrong way. On the second one, he's playing through the hands, which is the correct technique. And that's, you know, sometimes you miss. And that's
you got
ball.
Me started. You got me started. Look, Greg, I love you, man. I do. Like I said, I love you. You're a former athlete, just like Logan. Y'all former athletes. And I think y'all are a little bit more lenient than a lot of these guys, these ham and eggers who think they know everything and don't. But you guys understand how athletes think and stuff like that. And you kind of don't want to riff them too hard. But, you know, you are correct on what you're saying. And I know a lot of times it's the betterment for the team. And that's all we want to do. And I want this team to win more than anything. And I know you do. And I know Logan does, too. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. The funny thing. And, Mark, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. It was a great call. Some fun back and forth there. I appreciate it. Call back anytime. It's Mark and Largo making our day. And here's what I would say is, like, the funny thing about Mark's call, Anthony, is that I don't love this team more than anything. I'm a hired gun. I've talked about this a million times. Do I want them to do well? Hell yeah. Because while I, like, my love for the team, if you will, my care for the team, that's actually a more accurate term for it, is completely professionally rooted. I am someone who I'm hired to do this job. I'm not from here. Now, I have great relationships with a lot of people over there. Like, I have great relationships, like, so many friends in the area now. I've been here almost 10 years, which is wild to me. So, like, do I want this team to succeed? Yes, but I also want them to succeed because I'm selfish, and winning means that my job is happier on a day-to-day basis. I don't deal with angry callers. I deal with happy ones. It means that the people that I interview and interact with over in the building are happier and just more joyful to deal with. They want to talk more. People like to talk when they win. They hate talking when they lose. Realistically, you know, just cut to the business end of the chase. Our ratings are better when the team is winning. More people are interested. That's the dirty secret of it's not even dirty. That's the clean secret of the radio business, is that everyone thinks that all your local sports talk radio hosts want the team to lose so that we can tear them down. No, no, no. That's bad for business, because the pie of people that are interested in a winning team is so much bigger. Nobody cares about, all due respect, sorry, Michael and Will and everybody over in Southeast at Monumental's building, but nobody cares relatively about the Wizards right now because they're bad. And that's why right now they're like, hey, we're going to rebuild something. We're going to take our time while people are not paying attention. Then they're going to wake up one day and be like, wow, we got a good basketball team. This is cool. Like, that's the stated goal. But for the Commanders, like, yeah, I want them to win terribly badly because I'm tired of covering losing teams, and I want all of you to be happy, and it's good for the show. But here's the other part of that coin. That Mark, that is like the me poking fun at Mark the caller for the Ron Rivera narrative chasing bit, is I have no control over whether they're good or not. And if I do, that's bad. They're already bad if I have control over their ability to be good or not, because they need to live in the substance of reality, not in the narrative chasing world of whatever the heck we're saying. And so, like, for Take Command, when Logan and I break down the film, we're talking about what's already actually happened, and we're hypothesizing how it could actually get fixed. And so the idea that we have some control over the results on the field is ridiculous. And it's actually something I appreciate about Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and this current group, is like Cliff Kingsbury. That dude is not playing media games as a coach. I don't think Joe Witt Jr. gives a rip about what's going on in the media either. And I don't think that was the truth in the last regime specifically. I think they were way too concerned about what media narratives were and were constantly chasing those things versus going, hey, what's going to get the result on the field? And that is what this group is about. And I think that we, like any idea, like, we are having a conversation about them. They exist mostly in a bubble. And yes, do their friends or family or whatever send them clips of stuff? Sure. Are they humans, and does that matter on some level? Yes. But I don't think John Allen is getting out there on 3rd-and-7 being like, I better get after the rusher so that EB doesn't ask me a question about not having a sack on the junkies tomorrow. That's not how this works. He's out there to play, to win, because they're competitors. And this is where, like, I guess if you have been an athlete at any level, like, that's just, you don't think about narratives when you play. You just play, and you want to win, and you're in it. And then maybe you step back, and it is a kind of a silly thing that we do, that we ask them about the performances in the post-game situations and ask them about, like, what were you thinking in this? What were you doing in that? And help kind of, you know, first draft of history, journalism, I'll highfalutin the what we do. We try to write that and capture that for posterity. But does it affect, like, that's all after. That's not during. That's not before. And to the extent that that stuff is thought of before, it's typically forgotten by the time those guys leave the locker room, they get out on the practice field, and certainly by the time they hit the game field on Sunday. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Anthony, I don't even remember what Mark said about Emmanuel Forbes. Do you?
He started defending Jahan Dotson's honor.
Oh, that's what it was. Or in his words, Jahan.
Yeah, Jahan.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he raised something that was also interesting that was related, but I'm gonna take more calls. We got time for one or two more. Two, I'm gonna address the giving up on players too early part of Mark's call next. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And streaming live on YouTube, where the chat is lively today, at the Team 980. If you're watching on YouTube and you're like, Craig, where are you? I am in Indianapolis because I was at Fever Aces last night. We're going again tomorrow night because they're playing twice in 3 days, which is why we came up. So really, really cool to see Asia Wilson last night break the WNBA's all-time scoring record in terms of points in a single season. And she continues her MVP campaign. Aces clocked the Fever, who had been the hottest team in the W since the break. Aces starting to come together. Playoffs are going to be a blast. We're talking about it Tuesdays on the Hoffman W Sports WNBA show, which you can watch on Twitter or subscribe to on the podcast. But local W action, we're talking to Brittany Sykes from the Mystics at 6:30 tonight. Right now, though, we continue our coverage of the news of the day, which is that Emmanuel Forbes is going to have wrist surgery. He has a torn UCL in his wrist, the ulna collateral ligament in his wrist, and his which is also down into the thumb. And that sucks for him. He was out at practice yesterday. You might have seen the video. I think ABC7 had it of Dan Quinn kind of feeling around in his thumb and Emmanuel kind of explaining what's going on. And eventually they decided, like, actually the best thing for right now for him is surgery. Like, let's get this thing done, make sure there's no long-term repercussions here. And in the meantime, we'll figure it out. But Mark and Largo called, and he talked about how he thinks that Adam Peters has given up on Jahan Dotson too early. And for a guy like Forbes, you know, oh, you can't give up on another first round pick. And we got distracted by the second part of Mark's call and the idea that media narratives can affect play on the field and why that shouldn't be the case. But I did want to respond to the first part of the call. And that response goes something like this. Adam Peters is a trained professional who is making an assessment, not a dude in a box wearing a suit going on vibes. Like, Adam Peters watches the tape. Adam Peters watches practice. Adam Peters is constantly evaluating the person, the professional, the player, everything that he evaluates to decide who is going to make the 53, what value they have to the franchise. And that is literally his job. And by the way, his job is really, really hard. Like, there's a reason he makes seven figures, presumably well into the seven figures, to do that job. And it's because it's hard. It's because there's a lot of factors. You are putting together essentially a 70-piece puzzle, right, between 53 and a practice squad. You're also responsible for all the coaches, so add another 30 people, your front office staff. You know, you're responsible for like 150 people, and you got to make sure you have the right mix of all of that. And on top of the management of 150 people, including multiple direct reports that you're managing, your current season, your head coach is reporting to you, your scouting staff, your pro scouts are reporting to you, hey, we should be watching the potential trade for this guy, or hey, this guy just got cut, do we need whatever insert position here. Your college scouts, you're trying to make sure that you're not too far behind on the draft, slash you're probably going to certain college scouting things during the year to be able to watch games in person and scout. So there's a lot of things that you have to be good at, but at the core of it all, there's the people management of managing an organization, hence general manager, and can you evaluate football players? And so when you talk about, like, oh, you can't give up on a first round pick, they didn't give up on him. They made an evaluation that said he shouldn't be here. Like, that was, to take it to whatever business world you live in, that was a performance review. Jahan Dotson didn't pass his performance review. Emmanuel Forbes did. Forbes got a roster spot. Dotson got traded. And I understand that might be a small oversimplification of it, because, you know, the investment you make in someone, the first round pick, the talent, whatever, but, like, it's actually not. You hire someone, You pay him the money. You make whatever commitment you have to. You do factor that into how easily or not you move on from them, because in a salary capped league, there are ramifications for those decisions. And obviously there is a potential upside of higher picks that is self-evident. The guys get drafted in the first round because they're really talented. And even if you might not have drafted in the first round, it's not like Forbes was actually a fifth rounder. No, he was a guy with tremendous ball skills, anticipation, great length, big size. He competed at a high level in the SEC. He showed some physical toughness, even if he was undersized from a weight standpoint. And the hope was that he would figure out the rest of it in the NFL, and that some of the inconsistency will get more consistent with professional grade coaching. I've talked before how I think the cornerback position is the most coach dependent in the entire sport. And he got terrible coaching in year one. The problems that we were scared of got worse or exacerbated instead of made better. And ultimately we saw the end result, which is he was bad through an entire year. And then he had a bad game one this year when we were certainly hoping to see better. But that is Adam Peters' job, is to evaluate and project the best that he possibly can. This is what this guy is now. This is what I think he can be. He's worth the money we're paying him, and not, or not. He's at least a neutral to keep around, because, you know, hey, if we cut him, we have dead cap money and we can't really replace him. So we might as well, because that's the other thing too, is like, oh, you should move on from Emmanuel Forbes, cut him. And then what? Sign who? There are some guys out there, veterans that are available for a reason. Some of those are off the field reasons, and this team's not touching those kinds of guys. Some of them are available because their play declined. Some of them are available because they're not actually ready to play yet because they're hurt. So there's a litany of guys that are out there, and if you can find a diamond in the rough or a vet who just needs a different environment, maybe he wasn't cooked, he just got himself in a bad way, and you can bring that guy in, great. But realistically, you don't find good players, certainly great players, and certainly not building block players in September. You get lucky every once in a while. Every couple of years, you might sign a guy who's a really important piece to your season. You know, you think of like what Will Blackman was to this team when he got here after Seattle surprisingly cut him in 2015. Is when that happened. And like, Will Blackman was a really good piece for this team for multiple years. But those are few and far between. And it's far more likely, frankly, to happen at a position like kicker, which is super finicky. Maybe Austin Seibert all of a sudden is good in the way that Dustin Hopkins, who had bounced around, was all of a sudden good when he got here. And he can solve their kicker problem for multiple years. But to find a corner at a premier position in the middle of September is basically impossible. And so it's not about giving up on or holding on to or any other version of that for these first round picks. It's about making an evaluation of what they actually are, how good they can be, and whether or not they fit within your franchise, and then making the appropriate move. For Jahan Dotson, that was to trade him. For Chase Young last year, that was to trade him. For Emmanuel Forbes, it was to hope that he could take some of the growth that he had on the practice field to the playing field. It didn't happen in week one. Now he's out allegedly 6 to 8 weeks. We'll see exactly what that timeline looks like when we hear more from Dan Quinn tomorrow. But he's out for a while with this wrist surgery. And hopefully when he gets back on the back end of this, he's been a professional throughout the process, and he can return and play at a high level. And then he's here for the rest of his contract. And then if he's that good, maybe they sign him to another one. That'd be a hell of a story arc. But for right now, patience, waiting, things that we're really bad at, and something that not only are we going to have on the outside, but something that Quinn and company and Adam Peters, in terms of his evaluation, is going to have on the inside as well. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We'll talk a little bit more about what we saw from week one, kind of our last look back. And we'll also look ahead to the Giants with Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team. We'll take a look around some of the top headlines and the rest of the NFL as well next here on the Team 980.